This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hello and welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Why do some children thrive and others struggle? Well, the answer might surprise you. New research is showing that the seeds for adult success are actually planted in the toddler years, which some people are defining as ages 2 to 5. I know that may sound just a little bit odd, but there's a lot of research now that's showing that drivers such as resilience and self-reliance and self-regulation and empathy are more critical to success than simple intelligence. And, strangely enough, the toddler brain seems to be the best place to lay the foundation by instilling those drivers. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking with Tova Klein, who's a child psychologist and the director of the Barnard Center for Toddler Development in New York. Dr. Klein has all sorts of great things to say about why the toddler years are different from any other period of childhood and what's happening in children's brains and bodies at this age that makes their behavior so turbulent, and why our reactions to their behavior, the way that we speak to or we speak about and act towards our toddlers, holds the key to a successful tomorrow and, honestly, a happier today. One of the hardest parts of being a parent is truly being able to step back and look at our child and try to understand his or her experience of the world, which is very different from our experience as adults. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing in this part of today's show. I'm Armin Brott.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough. Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest. A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Tova Klein, who's the author of How Toddlers Thrive: What Parents Can Do Today for Children Ages 2 to 5 to Plant the Seeds of Lifelong Success. Tova, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about what a toddler is from your perspective. We know that it's going to be, for at least for the perspective of this book, ages 2 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And you mean until the fifth birthday or somewhere between 5 and 6?
You know, it's a great question because although we tend to think of toddlers, I think traditionally we think of 2 and 3-year-olds even, the toddler years are really those early years, so we kind of say 2 to 5, but what the book really is aimed at is that these foundational years, the toddler piece, the emotional piece of development, goes well beyond age 5. So, you know, parents often feel like their 6, 7, 8-year-olds have some toddler in them, and they still do.
You know, it's funny. I just was thinking as I was listening to you say that, I wrote a book on toddlers also from the father's perspective. And one of the quotes I came across, which was so I thought was wonderful, Fitzhugh Dodson, I think is the guy's name, who said that toddlers are first adolescents.
Yes.
And so just as you were saying, that, so you know, we now know that adolescence kind of goes through age 25.
Right.
And so you're saying that toddlers go through age 6 or 7. I think it's kind of entertaining that these periods are stretching out into years instead of, well, shorter years.
Right. I mean, and that's really because it's not that literally a 6 or 7 or 8-year-old is literally a toddler, but of the emotional development that's taking place early on, that ability to understand their emotions and who they are, is still happening as they grow older. So we have to remember that when we're treating our 8-year-old as the more reasonable 8-year-old that they are, that still emotionally they need us to be there for them in those kind of think back to when they were 2 or 3-year-old ways to say, you know, I'm here for you even when life gets hard.
Okay. All right. So let's take a look at just overall, give us a sense of What are toddlers doing that makes them unique as opposed to some other characters?
Yeah. So what toddlers are doing is, now that they're up on their feet, so let's say starting at 2 and certainly moving into those 3, 4, 5 years, is figuring out who they are, because they're separate from mommy and daddy and those adults in their lives. So really gaining a sense of who they are in the world, you know, we call it that sense of self, and feeling confident that they can maneuver in life even when their parents aren't there. But also they're trying to figure out who's going to be there to take care of me when the going gets rough, and who am I in this world? And then the other thing they're doing, which is both delightful and also can be frustrating, is they're wide-eyed and curious, and there's so much to learn and know out there. That's what makes this period so unique. Their brain is just developing incredibly rapidly, and there's so much for them to learn.
And as you said, they're learning in a way that can be sometimes frustrating, like they're learning about gravity by throwing stuff off of their high chair or throwing it around the room, and they're learning about pain tolerance by poking people and pulling hair, and they're learning about hearing, I suppose, and reaction and or action and reaction by ignoring us and completely not doing what we ask them to do. How do you identify the difference between malicious behavior, something that they're doing deliberately, and just normal toddler stuff?
You know, I think one of the strong messages in this book is that if we look at toddlers from an adult point of view, then their world looks very odd and kind of befuddling to us. But if you start to think about their world from their point of view, then it starts to make more sense. So the toddler, the young child who's really trying to explore and understand how the world works, it's almost like they're in a foreign country. If you've ever visited a foreign country and you kind of don't know what the customs are. So the way they learn is they touch, they throw, they lick, they bite. They use all of their senses to try to understand what's around them. They look, they watch. Depending on the child, they use different tactics more or less. So they're not being malicious, even though it feels that way to us. They're really trying to figure out both how things work in the world and then how much power do I have, which is where the control battles come in. They're really trying to figure out, oh, do I have some say in the world? I'd like to have some say. I'd like to make some choices for myself. And so that's the part that looks like they're trying to get us as parents, but they're really not. They're kind of saying, hey, can I have it my way? Can I really wear this blue shirt every single day for the next week? Or do I have to always do what you want me to do? And so it's this line back and forth in a power play.
Well, let's talk about, since the element of perspective of the toddler's point of view is so important to the book and so important to the work that you're doing, what is that perspective? I mean, how, at least from... You know, what are they? How are they looking at the world? Are they looking at it as a series of obstacles to overcome? Is it, you mentioned that they're trying to learn everything about it, but are they deliberately saying, "I want to learn this," or are they just kind of bouncing around a little bit?
I think it's, you know, it's a little of each. They're really driven by a couple of things that are going on. First is the new brain science, although we still know very little about the brain, but it clearly shows us that there's an incredible amount of brain development going on before the age of 5. And you see that kind of rapid development again at adolescence, but not in so much in between. So it's a really unique window. They're also being driven by, you know, we see them growing rapidly, but you also see their language coming. So every single day they're developing in leaps and bounds. And it does drive them out into the world. Literally, that means wanting to play with peers, but not really knowing how to... wanting to figure out, let's say it's puzzles or building with blocks, but not always knowing how to do it. So it's always this balance of trying to figure out what they can do and then being frustrated by either the limits within themselves because they can't quite do something they want, or the limits that we adults put on them because they really need the adults to guide them, to kind of give them the roadmap or the rules. I mean, we don't let children run out in the street because that's not safe. But... So it's a combination of their endless curiosity, which is really what drives learning through life, is, you know, desire to know, but also not having the skills to be on their own yet. And so they really need the adults. So there's this constant push-pull between, I do want to find out, not that they're consciously thinking that, but they're being driven literally by their development into the world and a curiosity in the world, but then they're being pulled back to, wait a minute, I really need you, mommy, daddy, to be here for me. And that's their struggle, but it's also then the parents' struggle. How much independence do I give them? How much do I take care of them and coddle them. And it's a balance for parents and it's a balance for the child.
Well, let's talk a little bit about setting up toddlers to thrive, which is one of the titles of the earliest chapters, actually chapter one. What do you do as a parent? How do you begin to get this? I mean, you know, we're talking about it now. People will pick up the book and get a little bit of a better sense of what toddlerhood is all about. But how do you set these rules or plans in motion so that you can be an effective toddler parent?
Right. It's a great question. So I think in a nutshell, really what we do as parents is we set up sort of the routines for our child. So, for example, toddlers have no sense of time or a schedule. You know, we wake up every morning and most of us say, oh, it's Monday, what's my plan for today, or what time do I need to leave so that I get my children to school and to work on time or wherever you need to be. But toddlers have none of that internal sense yet because their brains haven't developed it. So the most important thing that parents do is we give them routines. We get up in the morning, we have our breakfast routine, we have our getting dressed routine. At night, we have a bedtime routine. So when we kind of keep the schedule for them, it may be based on time for us, but for the child, it says, when mommy says come to the table for breakfast, we eat breakfast together. And then daddy says soon we're going to be getting ready to go to school, the child says, ah, my coat, because we've said it to them so many times. You put your coat on and then we go to school. And the same thing happens throughout the day if they're in daycare or school. So routines are really what set children up to thrive is one. I think the other big piece is every parent, we all want our children to be happy, however we define that. But that doesn't come from cheering them on all the time or saying, be happy, be happy. It would be too easy if it were that way. But that we help them through the really rough times. So they're disappointed, they're upset because they didn't get their way. As children get older, they come home and say, you know, my friend wouldn't play with me at school today. Well, we help them through those harder emotions. We let them be angry and let them know we still love them. Then we're helping them literally develop the skills to handle life. So comforting them in those times but allowing them to be upset, I think is so important because that's, again, what all the research out there is saying to us is we then help set up that emotion regulation that they don't yet have.
I've been speaking with Tova Klein, who's the author of How Toddlers Thrive, What Parents Can Do Today for Children Ages 2 to 5 to Plant the Seeds of Lifelong Success. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to continue talking with Tova about what toddlers are doing and why they're doing it. Also want to focus a little bit on what happens if you don't think like a toddler. How does that affect your ability to parent and their ability to grow up?
I walk and you drive. So let's make a deal. I'll watch for you and cross the street safely. You watch for me and stop. Think of the impact we can make.
A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
My son Casey was a bright, fearless 20-year-old with a boundless future ahead of him. But in the blink of an eye, he was gone. While out riding a skateboard, Casey fell. He was not wearing a helmet. Our whole family wishes he was. It could have saved his life. I'm Captain Kevin Raffelli of the San Mateo Police Department. Parents, encourage your kids to strap on a helmet every time they jump on a bike, scooter, or skateboard. Think of my son Casey and use your head. Put a helmet on. It could save your life.
A message from the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Broad. If you're just joining us, we're continuing our discussion with Tova Klein, who's the author of How Toddlers Thrive, What Parents Can Do Today for Children Ages 2 to 5 to Plant the Seeds of Lifelong Success. I'm kind of curious, you mentioned something about limitations and that they get frustrated about the things that they can't do. How much of that is physical?
Well, a lot of their communication is physical, right? So even when children have language, so let's say starting, obviously language starts before two, but from two on, depending on the child, let's say three at four, where they have language to communicate, it's not their first mode of communicating yet. So they often show us what they're feeling through their bodies, right? They may throw themselves on the floor. They may get frustrated. There's something in their hand. They lunge it across the room. It's really at the toddler age that a child will shove a plate away from them to tell you that they're done eating or they don't like it. So a lot of their actions are physical, and as parents, we can interpret that. I see you're done. I'm going to take that plate away so that it's not a battle. And when we interpret their actions, it actually helps them learn to eventually later use language rather than their bodies.
Well, let's talk about the shame element, because you have a whole chapter on that, and that's
right.
Kind of a cautionary tale about if you don't put yourself into the toddler's point of view, things can go a little bit off. And where do they go, and why and how?
As toddlers are trying to figure out who they are, and again, I say that whether they're two-year-olds or four- or five-year-olds, certainly as children get past three into the fours, five, sixes, they get more reasonable, but they're still trying to figure out their place in the world. But what we as parents can forget is how vulnerable they are during this period, particularly those early ages, 2 to 5. They're just getting to know themselves, and as much as they battle us, they're actually pretty vulnerable because they want to be accepted for who they are. And so if we see each of their moves as au contraire, which is what it does seem like, and you say to a child, let's put on a red shirt today, and they say, no, I'm only wearing yellow, it feels like they're battling us. What they're really doing is saying, hey, I have an idea of my own, and I know what I want to wear today. So when we say to them, fine, you can have that idea. You give them two choices. They pick one. They have some control. They keep getting the sense of, I can actually have an idea, carry it out. When we constantly say to them, or too often say to them, no, 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 or you can't do it the way you desire, or I don't understand what you want, so you're going to have to do it my way, they start to feel like, uh-oh, what's wrong with me that I even desire this? So that's where the shame comes in. And what we know about shame is that it basically kind of wipes out good feelings or the ability to stand up for themselves or have confidence in their own ideas. And that's really what we want for our kids, certainly as they go through life, to be able to say, you know, I can handle figuring out this math problem in fourth grade. We want them to have that confidence, but we're actually starting to build it in those early years, and shame counters that.
Talk a little bit about how temperament figures into all of this, because there are going to be so many different ways. I mean, some kids are going to be more responsive or more receptive, anyway, to the idea of put something on or don't put something on,
right,
or they'll be able to go along with routines a lot better. And there's an awful lot of opportunity for conflict if the parents don't really recognize the child's temperament, and they probably have a very good idea what it is already,
right,
without maybe being able to articulate it.
Yeah, I think this may be one of the toughest parts of being a parent, and particularly if you have more than one child. We all know this. They come into the world as who they are, and then we sort of take them from there. You know, some people have very cranky, colicky babies. Some people have very easy babies. And you have to parent them differently. And certainly by the toddler years, there are some children who really are go with the flow, and there are some children who you have to really work with to help them get into routines. And as a parent, there's no doubt that we know our children best. And I think often parents doubt themselves and say, well, I don't really know my child. But when you talk to a parent, particularly when children are challenging, you say, well, what helps your child, or what calms them down, or what do they respond to? That's how we get to know our children. So routines, for example, some children you can set the routine in place, and you're doing the same thing pretty much every day, you know, at least during the week, and they respond to it. And other children, you have to keep going back to them and saying, remember, before we put our shoes on, first you put your socks on, and you help them with their socks and their shoes. And I have parents say to me all the time, how many times am I going to have to say this? And I say, sometimes you're going to have to say it for years. It just takes some children longer to understand the routines or to do them for themselves. But when you stick with them, whether they get it quickly or over the long term, the point is that they eventually get that kind of organization. So we do have to respect who they are. Some children need a lot of power. That means they don't want you to just pick their clothes. They really do want you to say, here's two outfits, which one do you want?
You know, we talked a little bit about transitions and a little bit about change, and I'm wondering how this all works if the parents are not particularly organized and don't have routines in that particular way, or maybe they're a little, actually, way on the lenient side of, you know, oh, you can do whatever you want, honey. And what does that do if you are providing inconsistent times for things or letting your child perhaps have what some on the outside might think of as too much freedom?
Right. I mean, the truth is most of us swing from, you know, we could all say there's been times that we've been too loose and there's times that we've been way too hard, right? But when there's really a lack of routine for children, and it is hard for parents, let's say you've been able to live your life without a lot of this organization, and then you've got a 2 or 3-year-old in your house, they're really looking for a roadmap or limits and boundaries. Not that they're literally saying, please give them to me, but when we don't give children kind of that roadmap that says, you know, we don't throw food at the dinner table, or we actually sit at a table to eat, or we help them get out the door, children actually get anxious because they can't quite do it for themselves at this age. They don't have the great brain capacity. They also don't have the experience in the world. So they really do need us to say as adults, okay, I might be really disorganized, but what does my child need? It's a time where we can't afford to be as selfish as maybe we were before we were parents, that we have to really say, okay, this child is falling apart. Why? And what is it that I can do to respond to them? And that can be a challenge for anybody as a parent, particularly if your child is very different than you are. I think those are the hardest times for parents.
You talk about how the toddler years are kind of setting the stage for the rest of life in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see that happening? What is it that's going on in the toddler years? I mean, we've talked about how toddlerhood's going into 5 and 6, but how does that move into the preteen years or the tween years?
Right. Well, it moves into it in a number of ways. One is this is really where children are getting this internalized sense of who am I? Am I a person who can take care of myself, you know, not literally, I mean, obviously they have parents, but can I go to school and be okay? Can I figure out how to solve problems, whether those are social, not getting along with friends, or figuring out how to read or, you know, how to approach science and math problems in school. But also, who are these other people in my life? So compassion and empathy come from these early years as well, that children are learning that they can trust themselves or they can't, and that they can trust other people or they can't. And when you feel a sense of I'm okay in the world and I'm going to be okay, then it becomes much easier to be generous, empathic, and caring towards others. So you're getting both a social foundation, which is really an emotional foundation, but also this kind of passion for learning comes out of these early years of feeling like, I can handle that. I can rebuild that block tower when it falls down. Sure, I'll do that. That's where you get this kind of persistence and drive that, again, we want our children to have later.
We only have about a minute or so left, but tell us a little bit about what you do at the Toddler Center.
So I run the Barnard Center for Toddler Development, which is it's literally a lab school for 1.5 to 3-year-olds. So we observe toddlers. We have students who spend a year working with toddlers, and it's basically a preschool for 2-year-olds. And we do research there on both parent-child interactions, toddler development, and also development of parents, all the challenges that parents face when they become parents and then as they grow with their children.
Well, you're saying it's a preschool, so kids are there on an ongoing basis?
Yes, they're there for the full year. They're either for 1 or 2 sessions a week. It's just a half-day program, so it's literally a living laboratory of toddlers. That's all I do is live and breathe toddlers.
And over the years, have you seen toddlerhood change much?
You know, it's an interesting question. I haven't seen toddlerhood change much. You know, evolution is not going to allow us as humans to change that quickly. But I have seen the pressures on parents change and the anxiety of parents go up. And then they worry more about their children and try to micromanage them more. And I'm always working with parents to back off and let children be a bit so that we can respect who they are.
Tova Klein is the author of How Toddlers Thrive, What Parents Can Do Today for Children Ages 2 to 5 to Plant the Seeds for Lifelong Success. Tova, thanks very much. Great to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. The challenger wears white trunks with a blue stripe, and the champ is wearing, looks like an examination gown from the doctor's office. And from the back, we can... Ooh, that's not pretty. Champ, what's with the crazy getup?
I've got to take care of my family.
Yeah, so?
Well, when you love your family, you got to go in and get those important medical screenings. A lot of potentially deadly diseases can be treated if you catch them in time.
So you wear the examination gown because...
Because I'm a real man. Real men take care of their families and get those tests. Real men wear gowns.
Okay, champ, good luck. Here we go. The champ's not wasting any time. It's over. This fight is over. Champ, you barely broke a sweat. Any words for your fans out there?
Remember, go to ahrq.gov for a list of the tests they need to get and when to get them.
What was that web address again?
ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, joined by Samantha Fuse, who's my co-writing partner on the Parents at Play column, which is parentsatplay.com. Last week, we were talking about so many of the different trends that we were seeing. Actually, we were only talking about one of them, which happened to be poop. And so we're going to skip over that one and talk about a lot more of the things that we were seeing and were expecting to see out of the toy business this year. You know, one of the things I found really interesting was this kind of trend towards retro stuff. And it was really odd to be walking through some of these booths and to see the toys that I had when I was a kid.
I know.
Absolutely
kind of cool,
brand new looking, and think, whoa, but they're back. A lot of those things are back. You know, Fisher-Price, I remember, with their rotary dial phones. I mean, who hasn't had one of those things that you dial and it goes ding, 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 ding? And then there's, of course, for that's for older generations further back. But there's also the old generation of Ninja Turtles and the mm-hmm. old generation of Power Rangers that are kind of back. And they've even, in some cases, put together ways to link them with the Power Rangers. That we'll talk about this in another column, but with the keys that kind of bring up the skills and powers from the older generation. So there's been a trend in all over the place. You hear about STEM, S-T-E-M, science, technology, engineering, math. Right, and I was just going to say that. So a lot of people were talking about, in addition to STEM, STEAM, and they're adding art in there.
I like STEAM better than STEM, honestly, because there are so many studies that prove that when children are exposed to and interact with art, that they are better in every other subject, and they function better in the world later on. You know, so many people have this tendency to stick your kid in front of the TV or an iPad or a tablet all day, which, you know, there's a time and a place for everything, but engage with your kids. Sit down and play with them. And these things are so much fun. You're going to enjoy them, too. I love the Themes and Cosmos kits. Those are so much fun. We reviewed a few of them.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's fun and educational, and the education part of it just sort of slips right through without anybody being aware of it except for the parents, which is a very cool thing. We've got just about a minute or so left, but I want to talk about another thing we saw that had kind of a positive, negative thing to it, about cameras. The cameras are showing up everywhere. They're showing up now on the remote control helicopter, so you can go up and you can take a look at everything. And then there's the kind that you clip to your bike helmet or that you put on your back and you can and take it. And some of them are fantastic, and some of them you say, what were they thinking? Mm-hmm. For example, there was one on a wristwatch. Remember that one?
I remember.
You think, why didn't you make that waterproof? Because you're giving it to a
4-year-old. Yeah, a lot of the cameras, I was wondering why they didn't make waterproof, because there is no way that those cameras are not going to end up in a pool, in a puddle, in a toilet, in a sink, whatever. Kids are kids.
The technology is incredible, though. I mean, you're getting HD video you're shooting, and then some of them had 180 degrees, and some of them had 360 degrees, which was so if you imagine you've got this thing sitting on your bike helmet, and you can take shots all around you, and then on the editing screen it would be divided into four parts, and you'd be able to edit it all together any way that you wanted.
Another thing to think of too is that a lot of them were internet compliant. You need to make sure your kids aren't oversharing on the internet, because people can figure out where you are if you're not careful, and you don't need your 10-year-old letting every stranger in the world know where they are.
Fantastic point, yeah. You can get a lot more of our ideas on trends for 2014 at parentsatplay.com. For Samantha Fuse, I'm Armin Brott. Till next week.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.